Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining me Beyond the Divide. Today, I want to embark on a fascinating journey to uncover the origins of the Bible. This is one of the most influential books in human history. So, how did the ancient scrolls and the scattered writings become the sacred text that we know today? Who found these documents? How did they decide what made the cut? We're going to find out all of this and more in just a moment.
Rise above, we're breaking through. No more lies, just me and you. Hearts aligned, we'll find the way. Together, we'll seize the day. Beyond the divide. Chasing truth till the fight is won. From the shadows to the light we strive. United we thrive. Beyond the divide.
All right, guys, I want to start off today with the story of Matthew. Matthew is perhaps one of the most important scholars and scribes of the New Testament. He was an original apostle of Jesus Christ, and he kept track of everything. And a lot of it is from firsthand accounts. Some of it is from stories and oral traditions that were passed down. But his book is one of the most complete in the New Testament. So I want to explore his life just a little bit. I call this one The Shadows of the Toll Booth. In the dusty haze of Capernaum, where the Sea of Galilee lapped against the sun-baked stones like a restless debtor, Levi ben Alphi sat hunched over his ledger. The year was perhaps the 15th of Tiberius Caesar, around 30 in the Roman calendar, and Levi was a man of 30 summers, his fingers stained with ink and greed. As a tax collector for Herod Antipas, he was the empire's reluctant arm in Galilee, squeezing shekels from fishermen and farmers to fatten Rome's coffers. His booth, a squat wooden shack at the crossroads of trade routes, was a fortress of isolation. Jews spat as they passed, calling him a traitor, a collaborator with the unclean Gentiles. Son of Abraham? More like son of the eagle, they'd muttered, eyeing the Roman standard fluttering in the wind. Levi didn't care, or so he told himself. The coins clinked like hollow promises, enough to buy fine linens from Sidon, spiced wine from Damascus, a villa overlooking the water. But at night, when the ledgers closed and the shadows lengthened, a deeper emptiness gnawed at him. He was literate, schooled in the Torah as a boy in Nazareth, where his father had been a scribe in the synagogue. Alphi had dreamed of his son copying the sacred scrolls, illuminating verses with gold leaf under the flicker of oil lamps. Instead, Levi had fled to the tax office after a youthful scandal. Botched betrothal, whispers of usury even then. Trading quills for quills of a different sort. Receipts, tallies, the cold arithmetic of oppression. Better a live dog than a dead lion, he'd justified in his fading reflection. Yet the psalms he once memorized echoed unbidden. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Want? He wanted for nothing and everything all at once. That fateful afternoon, the air hummed with the low buzz of merchants haggling over salted fish and olive oil. Levi's head throbbed from the midday heat, his stylus scratching tallies into a wax tablet, as a caravan of Galilean pilgrims trudged by, bound for Jerusalem. He glanced up idly, wiping sweat from his brow, and there, framed against the blinding sun, stood a man unlike any he'd ever seen. Not a rabbi in flowing robes, nor a soldier in pleated bronze, but a carpenter from Nazareth. His eyes like polished agate, holding the gaze of the world without effort. The man wore a simple tunic, dust-caked sandals, and a smile that cut through the clamor like a blade through parchment. Their eyes locked. Levi's stylus froze mid-stroke. The man, Jesus Bar Joseph, he'd later learn, spoke two words that shattered the booth's walls. Follow me. No plea, no bargain, no appeal to Levi's buried faith, just a command wrapped in quiet authority like the voice of Yahweh calling Abraham from Ur. Levi's heart lurched, a taxman's heart, armored in cynicism, yet something ancient stirred. Was this the madness of the sun or the pull of a hook in deep waters? He thought of Elijah, leaving his plow for Elisha's mantle, of the prodigal stumbling home to open arms. In that suspended breath, Levi saw not a prophet, but the prophet, the one Isaiah foretold, who would bind up the brokenhearted. He rose unbidden, scattering wax shards across the dirt. Yes, he whispered, then louder to the stunned stares of passersby. Yes, Rabbi. The booth's door swung wide. He didn't lock it, didn't tally the day's take. Coins spilled from his pouch like tears trampled underfoot. Behind him, a disciple, broad-shouldered Simon, whom Jesus called Peter, clapped his shoulder with a grin. Welcome to the madness, brother. Levi, now Matthew, as Jesus would name him, echoing the gift-bearer of Genesis, walked away without a backward glance. The ledgers could rot for the first time, his accounts balanced. Word spread like Galilee wind. That evening, a low-ceilinged house Levi owned by the water's edge, its walls hung with Tyrian tapestries and Sicilian rugs, he threw open the doors, not to the pious, but to his own kind, the outcasts, the toll booth's brotherhood. Tax collectors from as far as Tiberias slunk in, wary-eyed, their tunics reeking of brine and betrayal. Sinners, too, harlots with coal-smudged eyes, lepers cloaked in rags, the lame who begged by the synagogue steps, the air filled with the aroma of roasted lamb, barley loaves, and fermenting date wine. Laughter bubbled, tentative at first, then free as if the room itself exhaled years of shame. Jesus reclined at the head, his voice weaving parables like threads on a loom, a shepherd leaving 99 for one lost sheep. A banquet where the poor dragged from alleys to fill the seats. The guests leaned in, mesmerized. Pharisees hovered at the threshold, scowling like storm clouds. Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? One spat to Peter. Jesus overheard, his reply like gentle thunder. Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but the sinner. Matthew watched it all, his scribe's instincts awakening like a dormant spring. He hadn't brought a tablet to the feast, too brash amid the revelry, but his mind etched every word. As a boy, he'd learned to discern the Kodesh from the coal, the holy from the common, by the weight of a verse's echo in the soul. Now that gift returned, sharpened by grace. Jesus' words weren't mere wisdom. They fulfilled the scrolls. Mercy, not sacrifice. Straight from Hosea. A dagger to the legalists' hearts. The banquet. Echoes of Isaiah's messianic feast on the mountain. Matthew's fingers itched for ink. By dawn, in the quiet of his villa, he borrowed a kneaded pen from Peter and began. From then on, Matthew became the quiet activist in the kingdom. While fiery Peter preached and doubting Thomas questioned, Matthew shadowed Jesus through the wildflowers of the hills, the fevered homes of Nain, the shadowed alleys of Jerusalem. He carried a small satchel, papyrus rolls, a bronze inkpot, charcoal styluses, not for show, as Jesus had no need of flatterers, but for fidelity. Write it down, Jesus once said after hearing the paralytic lowered through the roof, forgiving sins the scribes deemed blasphemy, that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive. Matthew did, cross-referencing the moment to Daniel's one like a son of man, and Isaiah's suffering servant. How did he know what mattered? It wasn't intellect alone, though his taxman's precision served him well, tallying miracles like debts paid, teachings like covenants sealed. No, it was the fire in his chest, kindled at the booth and fanned by the Spirit. Each parable landed like manna, the sower seed, fulfilling Ezekiel's dry bones, the prodigal's return, mirroring Hosea's unfaithful wife redeemed. Miracles, not spectacles, but signs. Water to wine, nodding to the new creation of Genesis. The feeding of 5,000, manna from Exodus renewed. Matthew sifted as a goldsmith refines ore, guided by the Messiah's own lens. Do not think I have come to abolish the law of the prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. Every stroke of his stylus was a prayer. Every margin, a bridge from Sinai to Calvary. Years later, in exile, after the ascension, after Pentecost's tongues of flame, Matthew compiled it all into a gospel for his kin, the Jews of the diaspora. Written first in Hebrew, the tongue of the prophets, it opened with Joseph's genealogy, tracing the thread from Abraham to David to the Nazarene king. The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham, no dry chronicle, but a living scroll, urging, behold, your king comes, lowly and riding on a donkey. And so from the shadows of the toll booth, to the light of eternity, Matthew the outcast became Matthew the evangelist. His story, a testament that no ledger is beyond redemption, no pen too stained to pen the words of life. For in following the call, he found not just a master, but the author of his soul. I want to take a dive into this book that is the cornerstone of faith for millions of people around the world. In this episode, we're going to focus on the Old and New Testaments. As the Christian Bible is divided into two main sections, which are the Old Testament and the New Testament. The Old Testament is also known as the Hebrew Bible, or the Tanakh in Judaism, and it forms the foundational scriptures that are shared between Judaism and Christianity. It comprises ancient texts that recount God's covenant with the people of Israel. The New Testament is unique to Christianity, and it builds on the foundation of the Old Testament by documenting the life and the teachings and the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ as the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies along with growth in the early church. Together, these texts were compiled over centuries through oral traditions, written compositions, and communal discernment processes. Their origins reflect complex historical, cultural, and theological developments, and they span from about the 12th century BC to the 4th century CE. So it's a huge span of time. So the story of the Bible's origins is kind of like piecing together an ancient puzzle. It's a tale of desert caves, meticulous scribes, heated debates among early religious leaders. But let's start with the raw materials, the scrolls, and the documents that eventually became the Bible. The Hebrew Bible, or what Christians call the Old Testament, began with the Jewish people's sacred writings. These texts were written in Hebrew, some Aramaic, and they were composed over centuries of about 1,100 years. It spanned between about 1,200 BC and 100 BC. So think of texts like the Torah. The first five books are attributed to Moses, Psalms, and the prophetic writings. And these weren't just sitting in a library waiting to be collected. They were living, breathing documents. They were copied by hand onto scrolls that were made of parchment or papyrus, and they were stored in the temples, the synagogues, and some of them were hidden away during times of war for the Jewish people. One of the most dramatic discoveries of these texts comes from 1947. Near the Dead Sea in modern-day Israel, we have a Bedouin shepherd who was chasing a stray goat, and he stumbled into a cave, and he found all of these clay jars that were filled with scrolls. These became known as the Dead Sea Scrolls, and they date from around 250 BC to 68 CE. And they include fragments of every single book in the Hebrew Bible except for Esther. We're not totally sure why Esther was not included with the Dead Sea Scrolls. It's possible that there's another cave somewhere that holds her actual writings, but her book comes mostly from oral traditions and kind of passed down from family to family. There were also things like community rules and hymns were found with the scrolls. So if you can imagine how exciting this would be to find this. These texts were over 2,000 years old at the time. Some predated any known copies by centuries. And they gave us a snapshot of Jewish life before Christianity began. But these scrolls weren't the only source. Other copies of Hebrew texts were preserved in Jewish communities. And they, we have like the Greek translation that was commissioned in Alexandria for Jews who spoke Greek. So there's various sources, if you will, of these ancient writings. This discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls was just a discovery of evidence to back up what we already knew. And the translation into Greek was huge because it made the Hebrew scriptures accessible to a wider world. And that one later became the go-to for early Christians. Now let's shift to the New Testament. This is the Christian-specific part of the Bible. This is where things get messy and pretty fascinating. After Jesus' death around the year 30 CE, his followers didn't sit down and write a book. They were busy and they spread his teachings orally. So by the 50s, Paul, who was a key figure in early Christianity, he started writing letters to churches in places like Corinth and Rome. You had these little tiny sects in these countries, and they were really, really far away from the main body of the church. So Paul is writing letters, and his letters tackle everything from theology to disputes in the church, and they are the earliest known New Testament texts. They were written between the year 50 and 60 CE. Then we have the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and they came later than Paul's letters, likely between the years 70 and 100. And most scholars today agree that these weren't eyewitness accounts, but stories that were compiled from oral traditions. And from, other earlier written sources. So they kind of found all of these different documents and they put them together. And they, decided through writing styles and things like that, this is probably from Matthew. And they kind of squished the book of Matthew together and so on. So if you think about it, some of these scholars may have influenced the books of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, because as they're passing around these writings, they're copying them down by hand. Sometimes they add or tweak little details. And it was kind of a vibrant and chaotic process with dozens of gospels and letters floating around. Some are now considered apocryphal, like the Gospel of Thomas or the Acts of Peter. So we have all of these documents kind of floating around. And how do we decide, who decided what was going to actually become the Bible? So this is where the idea of the canon comes in. It's a list of texts that's deemed authoritative. And for the Hebrew Bible, Jewish scholars like those at the Council of Jamnia around 90 CE debated which of the books were sacred and needed to be included. They settled on 24 books. And they prioritized the texts that were tied to ancient traditions. So prophetic authority, widespread use in worship, things like that. They prioritized these ones. Looks like Ecclesiastes didn't make the Jewish cut, but they do linger in some Christian traditions. So for the New Testament, the process was even messier than the Old Testament. By the second century, early Christians were facing a huge problem. There were so many texts out there floating around, and some emphasized like mystical teachings that didn't align with Orthodox beliefs. And church leaders like Irenaeus around 180 CE argued for a limited set of texts to help unify the faith. They favored writings with connections to the early apostles, either written by the apostles like Paul or linked to them like Mark. And traditionally, there were some that were tied to Peter. So the first known attempt to list a New Testament canon came from Macrion in the year 140 CE. He was a very controversial figure. He rejected the Hebrew Bible, and he actually cherry-picked Christian texts, like very trimmed down Book of Luke and Paul's letters. And the church pushed back against this pretty hard. His list was rejected, but it sparked a broader effort to actually define the canon of the New Testament. By the fourth century, councils had formalized the 27 books that we now know as the New Testament. Criteria included the origin, the widespread use in churches, theological consistency. Books like Revelation barely made it in, while others, like the Shepherd of Hermas, were left out completely, despite early popularity in this book, because it didn't have any formal ties to the apostles. So, who brought these texts into one book? The shift from scrolls to the codex, a bound book with pages, was a game changer for Christianity. By the second century, Christians had adopted the codex for its portability and the ability to hold more text. The earliest surviving complete Bibles were from the fourth century. And they are codices that contain both the Old and New Testaments in Greek. So these are like the Codex Sinaiticus and Vaticanus. And they were likely commissioned by wealthy patrons or churches, not by a single person. But they really mark the moment that the Bible started looking like a unified book, like we know it today. And then we have Constantine, of course, the Roman emperor who legalized Christianity in the year 313 CE. And he played a huge role because he had ordered 50 copies of the scriptures for churches in Constantinople. And this is likely what spurred the production of these early codices. But don't think about it as like a single eureka moment. The Bible's compilation was a centuries-long process. It was shaped by countless scribes, scholars, and debaters. They really decided what was going to go into what we know as modern scripture. And the Bible's origins aren't just historical curiosity. They really show us how a diverse collection of writings that were born in desert caves, scribbled in bustling cities and debated in candlelight councils became a cornerstone of faith for billions of people. The Dead Sea Scrolls remind us that the texts had ancient roots. The canon debates reveal the human struggle to define sacred truth. We no longer had Jesus Christ and the apostles on the earth. So we had all of these documents and we had to decide what was most important and what would be spiritual fodder and what would influence a spiritual generation to actually bring together and compile in a book. Now, the scrolls are still out there. You can actually look them up on the internet. You can see a picture. Most of the scrolls were not complete, they had been damaged. But the Isaiah scroll is fully complete, and you can actually see pictures of it. I believe that the scrolls now reside with the Roman Catholic Church in Rome, and they don't bring them out very often. It's kind of like the Shroud of Turin, and you usually have to be invited to actually see them. But you can, thank you to technology, you can look them up online, and they're pretty fascinating to see. But they remind us that this is what these prophets and these people in that time felt was important. The Codex shows how technology has shaped how we preserve and how we share ideas. Because we had so many opportunities for what to put in the book. And they went back and forth for years. It took 1,100 years it took to actually compile the book that we know today as the Bible, Old and New Testament. And the Old Testament, so different from the New Testament. And I think part of that is because not only was Jesus Christ present in the New Testament, but the Old Testament is a lot harder to understand. It's a lot less clear than the New Testament is. And I think part of that is because the people of the Old Testament lived, things like the law of Moses. They lived with the faith in the promised Messiah. But then the Messiah comes, and the people of the New Testament live with the promise that he gave them. His ministry was very short, but he gave us everything that we need in that short ministry. And we now can find that in the Gospels of the New Testament. I encourage you to read the scriptures. There are so many different versions out there, and it's hard to know which one to actually read. It's hard to know which one is going to be the most complete and the most accurate translation and, things like that. But if you read the scriptures with the spirit of faith and you pray to God to bless your efforts, then it really doesn't matter which copy you pick up. Just pick up a copy. Read it. Remember that these writings are thousands of years old, thousands of years before Jesus Christ even walked on this earth, some of them. And read it with a knowledge that they felt that these things were important and that they were going to be important for us today, because they were writing with a knowledge that a future generation would read these scrolls and would read this book. And I firmly believe that God planted that seed within them so that they would know what to write about, that they would know what to put in the book that was going to reach a generation in our time. Things now are so vastly different than they were then. There's no possible way that they could have known what we were going to need in this time. So, as you read the Bible, the Old Testament and New Testament, if you're not ready to tackle the Old Testament, just start with the New Testament. Just start somewhere. You don't even have to start at the beginning. Just flip through and start on a page. Or look up a trial or a Christ-like attribute or, any number of things. You have a topical guide. You can look up a specific topic and read a story about that. Have faith in your ability to discern what the scriptures are telling you. Pick up that Bible. Start reading it. And don't stop. It will change your life. It will change your faith. And it will bring you closer to Jesus Christ. It's a beautiful day, guys. Have a great one. Thank you so much for joining me on this little bit of a dive that we did into the scriptures today. I hope that it helped bring a little bit of clarity to you and maybe a little bit of fascination and interest and piqued your curiosity. Thank you for joining me.